Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
What happened during the legislative session's opening week? The Capitol Report reporters break it down.
A lot of Democrats saying there are portions to the bill that they like, but what they struggle with is the creation of a new state scholarship that's called the Family Empowerment Scholarship.
Also tonight, it appears storm-ravaged Northwest Florida will have to depend on state government help if it's ever to recover from Hurricane Michael.
Drive west? People are still living in tents. Many have left. Kids don't have a roof over their head, and they're trying to figure out how to go to school the next morning.
We'll also hear how the legislature is tackling the issue of racial disparity in regards to maternal mortality and what to do about those electric scooters that are buzzing around more and more towns. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the end of the first week of Florida's 2019 lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. Well, here we are at the end of the first semi-week of the 2019 Florida lawmaking session. We say semi because it was actually 4 days instead of the traditional five, but we'll be getting into full weeks after this one. And we are at the Capitol Report Roundtable, where we're going over with some of our reporters the most significant things that happened in the legislature during this past semi-week. And why don't we start off with you, Lynn Hatter. At first, welcome. You look none the worst for wear, but
thank you.
What did you see as some of the hot button issues from this week?
They wasted no time, Tom. I think you heard Governor Ron DeSantis has laid out his priorities. House Speaker Jose Oliva laid out his. And in the House, they started moving forward with it. You know, Jose Oliva has called health care a five-alarm fire. That's what he said in his opening day speech. And one of the first bills that rolled out were changes to the state's Certificate of Need program, which governs when and where hospital facilities and nursing homes can be built. And the House wants to get rid of it. And so one of the first bills out the gate, sure enough, was a Certificate of Need repeal. And that got approval out of a House Health Care Committee. It is now moving forward. Nursing homes want to be exempt from that. In previous iterations of this proposal, they've gotten that exemption. Whether they're going to get it this year is hard to tell. Oliva says, hey, we're going to run this thing again. We're going to see if we can't get the Senate to go along. And the Senate has historically resisted repeal. So that's going to be an issue now that we're going to be watching as it rolls ahead. But so far, the House is out the gate and it's getting started on its agenda.
There were some really densely packed committee weeks, too, in the lead in to this legislative session. New governor, new House and Senate leadership, and it is not an election year, and traditional wisdom would dictate that if you want to get some pretty controversial stuff out of the way, you do it in an off year when no one's facing election, because the political consequences are likely to be a lot less this year than there would be next year. Speaking of controversy, Blaise Gainey, my golly, you're getting into the whole marijuana thing. We have an old constitutional amendment that the voters said, yeah, let's go with medical marijuana. The state's been dragging its feet for years, and it looks like from what you've been telling us this week that they're really racing forward on that issue, too.
They are. They have a deadline of March 15th, which is next Thursday, and they are going to meet that deadline. The bill was sent over yesterday from the Senate to the House. The bills are pretty much the same. The big difference here is for people under 18, the House's version does not allow any smoking of medical marijuana. The Senate's version, you just have to see a pediatrician, get approval from a pediatrician, but they have to agree that that is the best method for you to receive it in. So a little bit of restrictions, a little differences, but ultimately there's been an amendment added to the House version to bring it more closer to the House Senate version, and I believe next week they'll move along to get it to the governor's desk.
So with so many things going on in regards to certificates of need and medical marijuana and all that kind of thing, that is by no means the only items that have been debated with a great deal of spirit and enthusiasm at the Florida legislature this week. Ryan Daly, you've been following a lot of stuff about one of the more controversial arenas, right?
Senate Bill 7070, that's the big thing going in education in the Capitol, especially this week. That's the huge education bill coming out of the Senate. A lot of Democrats have a big problem with this. It's aimed at starting a new state scholarship program, otherwise known as a voucher program, that's meant to help low-income families help enroll their students in private schools. Well, Senate Bill 7070, even some of its critics saying that there are a lot of good pieces to the bill. There's a lot of Democrats saying there are portions to the bill that they like, but what they struggle with is the creation of a new state scholarship that's called the Family Empowerment Scholarship.
Let me chime in here, because as Ryan has been saying, Democrats have issues with it, right? And one of the big things that Democrats take issue with is this use of tax money to fund these scholarships. I think that that's something that, you know, Governor Ron DeSantis has wanted. And what we see happening now is sort of the teeing up for some of these issues like vouchers that have long been contentious in Florida to go back to the state Supreme Court. We have a new governor now. We have new House and Senate leadership, but we also have three new justices sitting on the Florida Supreme Court, and it's a lot more conservative of a court. And I think that, you know, legislative leaders see an opportunity here to get some things through this session that might not have otherwise passed or been approved of in the past. And I think this voucher issue, Ryan, is one of those things.
And this bill also looks to reduce the wait list for the existing Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program. Senator Manny Diaz, who is the big backer of SB 7070, he kind of broke it down during the meeting that the way it intends to reduce the FTC wait list is it's going to pull unused funds from the state's HOPE scholarship. That was the scholarship meant to put students who had been bullied in traditional public schools into private schools. Like he said during the meeting, that scholarship, it's been slow going with recipients. Not a lot of people have taken advantage of that. So he wants it to be a system where they take those unused funds and allocate those to cut down on that Florida Tax Credit Scholarship waitlist.
Well, there's going to be a lot more controversy coming on that issue, as well as healthcare allocation of resources, Lynn Hatter, and also when it comes to medical marijuana. And that's just three. We have lots and lots more to come, and we'll be looking at it throughout this 60-day lawmaking session, of which 4 days are now history, right here on Capitol Report. Blaze Ganey, Lynn Hatter, and Ryan Daly. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Still to come on Capitol Report, full recovery is likely to take decades and cost billions, but Florida lawmakers seem willing to get the storm recovery effort in Northwest Florida shifting into a higher gear.
So we have the ability to not rebuild our communities of the past, but to rebuild the communities of the future.
Florida lawmakers wrestle with the long-standing matter of racial disparity when it comes to maternal mortality.
It is not outrageous to ask that we not die during childbirth.
And a pitch for e-scooters is met with a mix of excitement and concern.
If I'm sharing a sidewalk with somebody on an electronic scooter, I want them to go no faster than I can walk to get out of their way.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
You know, it's been nearly 5 months since Hurricane Michael struck our area, and in some places, such as Tallahassee, you look around and there's not a whole bunch of lingering evidence of the storm's passage. Oh, you may see still some debris that's piled up somewhere, or a broken tree to remind you of what happened back then, but the situation is very much different once you get out west of Capitol Circle, and in some panhandle communities, it might be even accurate to say the storm never really left. Now, there are countless efforts, both organizational and individual, that have been helping with the recovery process. And perhaps the most extensive is an organization called Rebuild 850. That's been up and running now since November 1st with the help of some former speakers of the Florida House of Representatives and a whole bunch of other folks. And we have two of the real spark plugs of that organization here with us. And we're so happy to welcome back to this area here of WFSU, Gwen Graham, who served as U.S. Representative for Florida's 2nd Congressional District. Okay, and we also say hi to Brian Kuhn, no stranger to this building either. Former director of the Florida Division of Emergency Management and currently serves as IEM's Vice President of Homeland Security and Emergency Management and is chair of the Multi-Hazard Mitigation Council. Did you get all that on one business card?
No, Brian? I have multiple cards after all of that.
Thanks for coming, Brian. We appreciate that.
Thanks, Tom.
From an emergency management thing, before we get into the specifics of the recovery effort here, how bad was Michael? We keep hearing all this. The third most powerful storm ever to strike the continental United States. Was that for real?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That was a terrific storm in terms of the wind speed, in terms of the storm surge, a catastrophic storm by any way that you measure it. And so the only redeeming factor of Michael was that it hit probably the most rural part of the state. Had that occurred anywhere else in the state or in parts of the country, it may have been the most devastating hurricane on record of the United States in terms of property damage and lives lost. But yeah, absolutely a massive storm.
Yeah, but the very fact that it hit a rural area with not a very big tax base, Gwen Graham, leads us to what you guys are doing with Rebuild 850, because these folks were kind of in bad straits anyway.
Well, the point of Rebuild 850 is to keep the attention on North Florida. And tragically, because we have so many disasters across the country, disaster comes and goes, and then the next one occurs, and everybody moves their attention to the most recent issue. And North Florida still needs a lot of help. And I'm so proud of what Rebuild 850 is doing, but more about what the communities across North Florida are doing to support our neighbors and help our neighbors. And so Rebuild 850 was founded by Speaker Bentz, Speaker Weatherford, and I was very honored that they allowed me to come on board as a co-chair so that we can keep the discussion going about the needs of North Florida. And just a couple days ago, I was in Marianna in Jackson County and saw that there's still so much work to be done. But, you know, we can do it. One of the things that I love most about the people of North Florida is that we support one another. We lift each other up. And I've seen that everywhere I go, working on behalf of those who've had their lives turned upside down, Tom. I mean, so many people don't know outside of Tallahassee. If you get in your car and you drive west, people are still living in tents. Many have left. You know, kids don't have a roof over their head, and they're trying to figure out how to go to school the next morning. So there's a lot to be done, but we're up to the task, and we're going to get it done.
Well, let's get a firsthand account of what's going on in Jackson County. As you mentioned, Gwen, Jody Mosley joins us here from Jackson County on Line 1 on our special perspectives today. Hey, Jody, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you today?
Hey, we're doing well. And again, we sure appreciate you bringing us up to date on what's going on in the county seat of Jackson County in Marianna. What's the current situation, Jody? You drive down Main Street in Marianna. What does it look like right now?
Oh, it's still total devastation. I still notice things now that I didn't even notice after the storm because of some of the debris that's being able to be cleaned up. As they clean it up, we notice more things that are still just, it's unreal. It is unreal. You know, we don't just go down Main Street. We go down side roads, back roads, dirt roads, the places that a lot of people don't get to drive down. It's not on their usual, you know, ride to work or commute to take their kids to school. They don't get to see the things that we drive up on. You know, we come across tents now are being set up. Even as we speak, we noticed three in between Cottondale and Marianna in the last 2 days that have been set up. A family of four, a single mother with three kids, and she's so scared that she's going to lose her kids because she doesn't have a home. And there's so many people that have lost hope because they're not getting any kind of help from FEMA. I mean, it's just, it's unreal and it's heartbreaking. And I don't think that anybody was really prepared. Nobody thought that it was going to come this far inland, and it did. And the struggle is so real for so many people. It is just, it's heartbreaking.
Jody, thank you for that. And and Brian Cooney, you're the numbers guy of this consortium here. And this is not just Mariana we're talking about here. This is that entire concentrated area of the panhandle, as you said at the beginning. This was sort of, Michael was more like a scalpel than a sledgehammer, but boy, where it hit, there was total devastation. So how many other Marianas are we talking about here within that?
I think there were about 12 counties that had significant impact to the individuals that received the individual assistance declaration. So as far east as Leon County, as far west, I think, as Bay County, and basically up to the Alabama and Georgia border. That's the direction that it went through. So roughly 12 counties who have situations similar or in some cases worse than what you're seeing in Jackson County.
North Florida lawmakers are pushing a $315 million Hurricane Michael recovery package. That's on top of millions more in proposed projects scattered across the counties hit by the storm. Panama City Beach Republican Representative Jay Trumbull is carrying many of the individual project bills, and he calls the hurricane humbling.
And some may not like the term relief, but as said before, that's the role of government. That's why we're here. The state government is doing its part, and we've got to ensure that the federal government does their part as well.
The larger package is sponsored by Tallahassee Democratic Senator Bill Monford, Panama City Republican Senator George Gaynor, and Pensacola Republican Senator Charles Broxson. It would create a loan program to help cities and counties through their recovery. Area lawmakers say they want to rebuild with an eye toward the future and not the past. Hurricane Michael carved a swath of damage from the Gulf of Mexico across the Georgia state line. Democratic Senator Monford says the plan is needed to keep small rural counties from going into debt. Damage estimates are at $25 billion. That's a price tag well above the capacity of the cities and counties in the area to absorb.
We have an opportunity, and the other surrounding areas of focus that Hurricane Michael affected, is we have the ability to not rebuild our communities of the past, but to rebuild the communities of the future. To put Northwest Florida in a place that is the most successful that it can be. And we cannot do that without, you know, legislation like this.
The plan also makes timber farmers eligible for emergency loans, creates a hurricane housing program to help with shortages in the wake of the storm, and also creates a task force to examine the response and make recommendations to the state. A pair of Senate and House bills looks to address maternal deaths from what lawmakers say are preventable complications during pregnancy. Ryan Daly returns to report women of color die in childbirth at significantly higher rates than white women.
My friend named Kay was 29 years old when she passed away.
Alex Audate is an attorney who shared her personal story dealing with the aftermath of a friend's death during pregnancy. Audate says her friend, a nurse, died in the same Miami hospital where she worked a week before she was set to get married.
She died in a hospital after many complaints of minor symptoms, but symptoms that, if ignored, obviously would result in death.
Hemorrhaging, infections, preeclampsia, and hypertension disorders, all of which can be reduced by proper care.
Democratic Representative Camilla Brown is a sponsor of the House's bill to create a maternal mortality prevention task force.
The task force would consist of the state surgeon general, the secretary of the healthcare administration, two senators and representatives, a physician appointed by the Board of Medicine, and a physician appointed by the Board of Osteopathic Medicine.
Brown says the task force will play a mostly advisory role when it comes to recommendations on policy, rules, and laws.
A task force to evaluate methods, improve current practices, procedures, programs, and initiatives that will help reduce the rate of preventable maternal deaths.
Charo Valero with the Florida Latina Advocacy Network says the scales are uneven regarding who is impacted.
More women, disproportionately women of color, in the United States die from pregnancy complications than in any other developed country. That needs to sink in.
One first step to begin correcting that problem, Valero says, is stepping up data collection.
Due to no uniform system of data collection or a state law that requires this collection, what data we do have only gives us a small window into the healthcare crisis, because it is a crisis for women in Florida.
Senator Audrey Gibson of Duval County is sponsoring the Senate's version of the bill.
We are the greatest nation in the world, and we should not have women dying in childbirth.
Gibson says data showing black women being impacted at a higher rate is uniform across class lines.
On average, in the United States, black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die during childbirth than their white counterparts, regardless of health, regardless of prenatal care, income, education.
I am in constant state of anxiety about the likelihood that I will die while trying to birth.
That's Jasmine Rogers with the Miami Workers Center. She lauded the proposed legislation for looking to find what she calls innovative ways to save lives.
It is not outrageous to ask that we not die during childbirth.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
Gina Jordan looks ahead to the first full week of action at the Florida Capitol.
Here's a look at what's happening Monday at the Capitol. Monday is usually a travel day for lawmakers, so the House has just a handful of committee meetings. Several appropriations committees will take up funding for local projects like guardrails, bridges, and affordable housing. In the Senate, a bill bans fracking in the state and further says that permits for drilling or operating a well do not authorize fracking. You may soon have a duty to assist someone who has suffered serious bodily injury under a proposal known as the Good Samaritan Bill. There's more talk about increasing the penalty for intentionally causing the death or great harm to canines or horses used in police, fire, and search and rescue situations. The proposal also applies to using a deadly weapon on the horses or canines. Hazing is endangering someone's mental or physical health. It's already illegal in Florida. Lawmakers are considering expanding the term to include planning a hazing event or recruiting someone else to commit the act of hazing. Most life and long-term care insurers may not be allowed to cancel, limit, or deny coverage, or alter the price of premiums based on genetic information. And eligible job training organizations may be entitled to a partial refund of certain sales taxes sent to the state. That's some of what's on the agenda Monday in the Florida Legislature. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Gina Jordan.
Well, two Republican senators who play a major role in determining the education budget said this week they don't see a need to overhaul higher education rules in the wake of that University of Central Florida financial scandal. And that exposed a rift between the Senate and the House. The House, with the backing of Speaker Jose Oliva, is threatening to overhaul the higher education budget after UCF misused tens of millions of dollars for the construction of a building. The University of South Florida and the University of Florida are also under scrutiny for potential misuse of taxpayer money for construction projects. Hundreds of pages from a legislative investigation into misspending at the University of Central Florida, Senate Appropriations Chairman Rob Bradley of Fleming Island agreed, said he sees no reason to change course on what the legislature has been doing in policy and funding for the higher ed system. But on the opening day of the session, Oliva made clear that one of his top priorities would be to pass legislation changing spending rules in the university system, which he said engaged in great excesses. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally, tonight, while cities say they're excited about new transportation options associated with so-called micro-mobility devices, some are worried the state is trying to scoot by with yet another home rule exemption. Regan McCarthy has more.
On a walk through Cascades Park in Tallahassee, you're likely to see people pedaling by on matching white bicycles with large front baskets. They're called Pace Bikes and are part of a bike share program in Tallahassee. Riders rent them through an app they can download on their smartphones.
As a planner, I'm always really excited when we can offer the potential for new transportation and mobility options to our citizens and our visitors. So things like e-scooters and bike share are really exciting for me.
That's Tallahassee Leon County Transportation Planner Julie Christensen. Officials say those programs help to address the first mile, last mile problem common in public transportation by helping riders get from wherever they are to the nearest bus stop. Adding e-scooters to the city's transportation options could be a help, but Christensen says current state law makes that tricky.
So under current Florida regulations, these are state regulations, e-scooters are not permitted on roads or roadways. They're also not permitted on bicycle lanes, sidewalks, or paths. So at the moment, in this city and in the state, there are no places that e-scooters are allowable to be used except for on private property. Mm-hmm. However, municipalities can enact an ordinance to allow these e-scooters on sidewalks, but we cannot enact an ordinance to allow them in bicycle lanes or on roadways.
But Tampa Republican Representative Jackie Toledo is pushing for a change to that law. Under her bill,
the operator of a motorized scooter or micromobility device has their rights and duties applicable to the rider of a bicycle when concerning safety, such as a light for visibility and helmet for personal protection and bike lane for use. These devices can go wherever a bike can go and must follow traffic signal laws. The devices may not block pedestrian traffic, and if a rider is under 16 years old, they must use a helmet.
Jeff Branch with the Florida League of Cities says the measure unfairly forces communities to open their doors for e-scooter companies, whether their residents want them or not. And he argues the bill doesn't give local governments enough wiggle room for regulation.
Why is the state trying to regulate scooters locally when there's not an issue? There's not a widespread fraud or abuse. It's local governments trying to tell the industry, work with us. We appreciate what you're trying to do. First mile, last mile. But we have to protect our citizens. We have to figure out where scooters are allowed, where they're not allowed. And in most cases, in some cases, they may not be treated the same as bicycles.
Branch says in some cities around the country, scooters are linked to a growing number of injuries.
In the city of Austin, the CDC is investigating because injuries have increased.
And in Tallahassee, resident Ramona Abernathy Payne says that's a concern she has as well. She says electric scooters can move pretty fast. She wants the government to limit that.
If I'm sharing a sidewalk with somebody on an electronic scooter, I want them to go no faster than I can walk to get out of their way. So I would suggest 5 miles per hour, which is still a fast walking pace.
Toledo's bill has cleared its first committee. A similar measure in the Senate has not yet been heard. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again every weeknight throughout the Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. You can hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.